Welcome to Inside Remote.
Hey, ladies and gents, welcome to the new episode of Inside Remote. My guest today is Radoslav Stanko, who is coming from Bulgaria and works as a CTO for Product Hunt. We had a great chat and Radoslav was a great person to talk with. He has a lot of things to share with you. Anyways, Radoslav, welcome to Inside Remote. I'm very happy to have you as a guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so for a start, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Okay, my name is Radoslav Stankov. Everybody just call me Rado for short. Currently, I'm head of engineering at Product Hunt, where I'm working since 2014, I think. And I'm also organizer of a conference here in Bulgaria where I'm located called React Not a Conf, which happened for the second year 2 weeks ago. And yeah, I'm engineer by heart and by trade, and that's basically it about me.
Oh, that's really nice to hear that you're also an organizer of the conference. And you just said that recently it happened. Can you tell us a little bit more about the conference you organize?
So I'm organizing like a lot of... Before I was organizing a lot more conferences in the Balkans. And 2 years ago, I started organizing the React Sofia meetup. And for its 1 year anniversary last year, I was thinking I should make like a bigger meetup, like maybe with foreign speakers. And there was so much like people wanting to come and like interest from partners that it's actually become like a conference. And the name React Not a Conf was a bit of a joke because I really didn't want to make a conference because I knew how much work it is. What happened was it actually became like a real conference. Like a friend of mine suggested, yeah, you should make a conference, and it became like a real conference, but the name kind of stuck.
Okay, that's nice to hear. We'll definitely add the links and notes. So to ask you, like you said, you're working for Product Hunt. Like a lot of people know about Product Hunt, and you said you're working there for now around 5 years. And what I'm interested in, though, is how did you start working remotely?
So actually, my first work remote actually is in 2006 was the time I actually started working remotely long before Product Hunt. This was because back in the day, I was working at the agency of my hometown, Dobrich, in Bulgaria. And I had to go to university to a neighboring city. And the agency, which I was working since I was 15, wanted to keep me on board. So I actually started working from home and basically start doing remote work. And I'm basically doing remote work since 2006 with like a 2 years working in a real office and not liking it very much.
Okay, and in your experience, I'm just trying to understand. So you were working like remotely as like part of the agency, and then this like naturally then shifted just to remote work also for the like international clients. Or how did the switch happen? Because the story behind it, there's like a lot of people who, you know, try to take a bridge and start working remotely, but they don't really know how to make the switch from going in-house to remote.
Yeah, so basically I started remotely again by accident because I was really valuable for the, at least they thought I was really valuable and wanted to keep me. And also when I was working remotely for the agency, I mean, I basically work with clients remotely as well and basically learn how to do that. And for my next job, I actually applied for like a job which was like in a startup in Vienna, which was also a remote job offering. Like I saw in like a user group board for like here a local user group board for Ruby on Rails developers that one guy who was the CTO at this startup in Vienna back then was searching for people, and the work was remote. They didn't want to have office and the work was remote. So I just applied, they liked me, and I worked there for a couple of years before the startup ran out of money and gas. And in the end, I was actually the CTO of the startup when we had three people. But it was a fun experience. And that's actually the place where I really understand what's to work remotely. Because in the agency, I was pretty much the only remote person. And this created some problems. And in the startup, it was pretty much remote. We were all remote.
All right, it's quite an interesting story. So this is basically just you applied for the job. And one question I have is, for example, how, in your view, especially in your case, for example, for people who are not living in major tech hubs like New York, San Francisco, or London, how important is the ability to work remotely? How does this enable and change lives of giving you an ability to work, for a top company, which is based solely on other side of the world, for example?
I think this is an amazing opportunity for people right now, and it's getting easier and better every day. And to be honest, I actually cannot imagine working in an office, having to go to the office every day type of work. I hope I don't have to do it anytime soon. And this is a great opportunity because you meet a lot of different people. You work with a lot of different people and you can work it in your own time, with your own schedule. And you have a very good opportunity to work with the best talent in the world, because to be honest, not everybody can live in San Francisco or New York. San Francisco is not that big. New York is quite large, but not everybody can be there. And if anybody is there, it's actually too crowded. And the market there for jobs is quite heavy and quite filled with a lot of opportunities. And it's very hard for people to stay there at their job for more than 1 or 2 years. And with remote work, I have friends who are staying at their places for 2, 3, 4 years even.
I definitely agree. And there's a lot of companies and even people working remotely just saying how this changed their lives and gave them even ability not only to work remotely, but also to work for top companies which are based somewhere else and they do, their best at what they do, but they wouldn't have their ability to work on something like this because they live in, for example, rural areas or cities where the tech scene is not big. And I definitely think as well, this is a huge advantage nowadays that we're able to work remotely. And in your experience, you see there's more and more people starting to work remotely. I'm interested on how do you approach this at Product Hunt? Since you're an engineering lead, you probably hire people. How do you approach hiring remote people? What are the important things you look at when you hire?
Yeah, just for the context, Product Hunt is was remote first from day one. Mm-hmm. From its founding, Ryan founded the company, and the previous previous CTO Andreas was they were working remotely pretty much from the start, and the company is designed around remote work. And my engineering team right now is only 6 people. So that's very important to know the size. Mm-hmm. And how do we approach the hiring? So we are we don't hire very often. We try to keep our engineering team less around 10 people. We try to follow the 2-pizza rule. And we actually don't have a systematic approach because we don't do it very often. But what happens is, first, Product Hunt is kind of a known brand name, so a lot of people know about it. And the second area is The company which acquired us a couple of years ago is AngelList, and AngelList have this whole recruiting platform. And when we are part of AngelList, we can use the recruiting platform. So we have this good advantage for finding leads and finding people. Like, we have a very good network, and we have this company which we're part of. So that's one of our like advantages in sourcing. And for the recruiting process itself, it's, again, we are hiring only remotely. We don't care where the engineer is from.
Okay.
Like, for us, the person can be from pretty much anywhere. The only thing we are trying to do, cover a lot of the time zones, like a lot of the time there is like people working at Product Hunt.
And since you said like you have a quite a small team and you don't hire really often, what would you advise people when trying to, let's say, apply for the job working remotely?
So the advice I'm going to give you is stuff which made me like a very good, which was very good when I saw candidates do that. Like, I think two of our candidates who recently hired were doing stuff like that. So the first thing is, when you apply for a job, don't just click a button, I apply, and in 100 jobs and think that some of these stick. Actually, take your time and like really think about which is this the company you want to work for? Does the product seems good for you? Or if it's an agency, does they work with clients you would care? And when you try to work with this company, like, do your like cover letter, like, I don't like this business term, but just write a note from yourself. Don't just use like a template, and think about why do you want to work at this place and what do you find interesting there. The other good advice is, be curious about the company. Don't just say, yeah, they're a big company, they pay well, that's all I care about. Actually, care about the things you care, like, ask about their culture. Try to find a place which fits you, and you think you'll be happy there. Also, try to be like qualified for the position you are. If you are not fully qualified, say this up front, but say that you are excited and you want to learn. And yeah, that's like basically it. Like, be prepared when you go to the interview. There is really great when you speak with candidate and the candidate knows about the company. They ask you very thoughtful questions, and actually I had interviews where people ask me questions, and actually those questions spun up like features from Product Hunt because I was a bit embarrassed by the answer. I had a couple of questions where it's like, okay, I'm embarrassed to answer that, so I would adjust our process and fix this feature so I'm not so embarrassed by that. And like, questions like that and people like that are like a joy to work and interview with those people.
Yeah, I can totally imagine. It's just like somebody who's engaged with the company, just not doing the same interview again and again, and going out and try to get just like a random job, but really thinking whether you're fit for the job, as you say, and trying to get into the company's mind and how they operate and feel them.
Yeah. Also, one other thing which also is good for you to do is be always polite. Even if you are rejected and they tell you, okay, we go somewhere else, or we don't think you're a good fit, don't be just like flip the table, be angry, be polite, and actually ask why they didn't choose you. Ask like the person who interviewed to give you like feedback for you, because I think that's very useful for you. You can actually see where you're not a good fit. Is there something you need to improve? Is there like something you didn't present about yourself? Or stuff like that. Like, always ask for feedback, even if you're rejected. Don't just use this as an opportunity. Like, don't waste your time. The time we have is our most precious resource. So just if you are not accepted to a job, just write an email or like a call or say, okay, what have done better? What's the feedback you can give me? Like everybody, like every good person would actually give you like honest feedback, because like the like life is long. Like you might work with that other person in another company, or in the future you might actually be qualified for the job, mm-hmm. or stuff like that.
Yeah, makes sense. I think that's a great advice and very undervalued thing to do. Just like get feedback and keep iterating, even if needed, with the interviews and applying for jobs. You can actually learn a lot. It might happen even that you don't expose the skill you have, and somebody just didn't realize because you didn't expose it enough. And yeah, it totally makes sense. The question I have for you is, so a lot of remote candidates have this catch-22 problem with being inexperienced working remotely. So majority of ads we see for jobs are companies trying to hire experienced remote workers. But in order to get there, you have to work remotely first. So, you know, how do we solve this problem where you have like, you know, a person who's working maybe on site and a couple of days remotely, and they're pretty much fit for the job going rather culturally or technically. But you know, they don't have this experience. Do you have any advice for them on how to approach this, or, you know, how to get in to get experience? Or even on the other side, for companies who try to hire, do they really need to be strict with, you know, we hire only people who worked remotely before?
On the company side, I don't know how to give much advice there. Like for me, I always try to give chance to people. Like if you have worked remotely, that's great. If you haven't, let's give it a try. And the thing about it for the company side is, if the company is designed to be remote, it can melt the people inside of it to work remotely. For people, it's a bit more complicated, because like the first question you need to answer is, do you actually want to work remotely? Because again, not a lot of people might actually like going to an office, have like a end date, start date, and even working remotely. Like me, I'm actually going to a co-working space, mm-hmm. like I have like a working hours and trying to like separate my work life and stuff like that. But how do you start? So one way for you to actually learn is you can start playing it as a game. Like, for example, if you currently work at a place, ask them, can I work one day from home or second day at a home? Like, try to work remote one day of a week. Or if your company you work for have different offices, try to work with the office which is not your office. Like, let's say your company has an office in town A and in town B, and you're in town A. Try to work with the projects for office B. Also, try, like, one of the most important things in remote work is clear communication. And that's, like, the most important thing. You need to make your work visible, that what you have done, and you need to communicate with people in order to get your tasks and your whatever you need to do clear, and you need to give that back. Like, you need to be very clear in communication. So even if you haven't worked remotely, just for example, try to be more focused on the meetings. Try to run to participate in the meetings and make them more focused, because like meetings and remotes are even more terrible than being in an office and meetings. Try to be more clear in your email communication, in your code review, if you do code review as a programmer. If you are a designer, try to get the design feedback on like Slack channels. Try to have all the communications you have in your teammates visible. Like there is a lot of communication, which like a lot of companies, even they're in the same office, they would use Slack or something else. So try to push to have more communication in a written form than request a meeting. Like, don't, for example, try to force yourself this to you. Like, for example, if you work with designer and you have some questions about the design, and the designer is like 2 days away. Yeah, it's easy to go interrupt the person and ask them, and if they're polite, they would answer you. But try to like form your 3 questions if they're not urgent. Say, okay, I have those 3 questions. Send them on Slack and try to communicate in that way. So just try to pretend that the people are not in your office in order to get the feeling on it and like gain experience. Also, one good way to get remote work is actually do a remote work. Like, try to get like on a freelance project, like a freelance gig, because a lot of freelance gigs are mostly remote. Also, try, for example, to contribute to an open source project if you are a developer. Like, contributing on an open source project is pretty much 99.9% remote. So you collaborating with somebody else on a project is like something which will train you how to do remote work.
That's a great advice. I think that's an important aspect to look like. So just training to get better at working remotely, even though if you work on site, and with time you'll get better. And especially if you work on freelance projects, yeah, there's a numerous opportunities out there. Even if you do a part-time gig, there's something which it counts towards working remotely in some way. One question I have for you is, you were mentioning the communication needs to be good. So what communication practices you follow at Product Hunt, or at least in your team, which you think are essential for you guys and you would advise others to use them?
Okay. I mean, for us, it's like, since we're doing it so for so long, it's like a bit like stuff which is no brainer for us. For somebody might be, whoa, why I didn't think of that. So first, what we try to do in Product is reduce the meetings, like conference meetings, to a bare minimum. Like most people have only 1 meeting or max 2 meetings per week. And like, one is, we have this all hands meeting for the whole company. Mm-hmm. So everybody in the company is on the same page, because it's very important that you work on your project, but you should know that your fellow engineer works on the other project, and how is the company going. So we have this half an hour, very structured product call, like a call, all hands. And the other calls which people have is, if they work on a project, there is an optional project call for that project, only if there is need for something to be discussed. We try to reduce the status meetings updates to zero. Like, we don't have meetings where it's like, what did you do this week? I did this and this. What did you did this that week? I did this and that. Like, those meetings are eating the time for everybody, so we don't do those. Of course, I do one-on-one meetings with my engineers every 3 weeks. Like, I try to do them like on a regular basis, but not too often and not too sparse. We try to write a lot of things. Like, for example, we don't do daily stand-ups. Like, a lot of software companies, they have this, like, the team working on something at one time, they're all sitting and they're like, either on Skype, they're like sharing what's going on. We don't do that. We just have like a Slack channel for weekly updates, which is like pretty much like the daily stand-ups, but on a weekly basis for us. We also have a channel called Changelog, which is every product update which went to production is mentioned there. So even if I don't work on a particular project, when I read this channel, I know this feature was shipped. Our community team know that. So we have this beat of what's happening with the company. On the engineering side, we used a lot of code review process and pull requests, and we tried to keep this communication in GitHub. We also try to have, on the product level, we try to have a lot of Slack chats. I don't know how, like every project have a very clear definition who is working on that project and what are the roles on that project. And we have like a Slack channel for every project where all the stuff regarding this project is communicated. We might have to do a better job of doing documentation. Like us on the engineering side, we try to, instead of writing documentation, we want to have like automated tools to do our work. For example, we have automated code styling tools because it's better than documentation, which is better for somebody shouting at you, you don't follow the style guide. So we try to reduce friction. Like basically you try to reduce friction. It doesn't work every time, but, and again, as everything we can do, we bring better job in documentation, in spreading knowledge. But yeah, that, those are some of the things we do in order to like, improve our communication, because basically you want to reduce friction and people shouldn't wonder what's next and what's happening.
Yeah, that sounds great. And there's, like you started with not knowing what to say, but there's definitely some guides you follow. And yeah, it makes sense. And it's interesting to hear the differences between companies. But like you said, like a lot of remote companies follow, let's say, some guidelines at least, or rules they practice. One question which I wanted to ask is, like, very interesting, you don't do daily stand-ups, but you do more like weekly stand-up or weekly report on what do you work on. I'm interested in, like, how do you track progress, or like how do you first personally track your productivity, and how do you measure your team's productivity?
Okay, my personal like I'm a very productivity geek. Like I'm having my variation on something like I'm like I can do a whole show about how I do my productivity work. As for my team productivity, like what we try to do, and like again, this is still in flux, but basically. We don't care if, for example, an engineer coded for 1 hour and was done with this feature, or if he coded for 20 hours. Like, again, we want to work healthy hours, but we care about output, not about input much. We care about like results. The main reason we don't do daily stand-ups is most engineers work on a project by themselves as the only engineer on that particular project. And a lot of things, the stand-ups are really great if you have like three engineers working in the same project, so they're actually, the decisions from one engineer affect the decisions from another engineer. We don't do that. We want every engineer, we optimize for something called single player mode on the engineering side, where one engineer should be able to design a database, work on the back end, work on the front end, take even product decisions, and it shouldn't, that this engineer shouldn't be blocked by missing information. If there's missing information, you should either make a decision or find somebody to give him that information, but that should be more rare. So that's the reason we don't do daily stand-ups, because you would be the only engineer there and the other person would be a designer. So if you say, yeah, I had this problem with this API code, it's taking 10 seconds. Yeah, the designer won't be able to help you. And the designer will say, I'm working for this workflow. You might not be able to help them. If you need help, the places to, we have like a Slack channel. And if an engineer has help, he just reach out to the whole engineering team for help and trying to be more helpful, or they reach out to me because we have a lot of people. So that's the reason we don't have daily stand-ups. And that's the reason we have like a weekly, every week in a Slack channel, you have to say what you work on this week, what you're going to, like what you work last week, what you're working this week. Do you have any big blockers? And are you out of office? And since the work is split into projects, every project has something which we call project lead. And the project lead can be a designer, an engineer, or a community person. And they actually have to follow the progress about this project. And the project progress is not any particular feature, but it's a bit more metric. We try to make it a bit more metrics driven. But the idea is we care that this project, how is the project going? And again, I, as a lead, I got a bit more weird role. Like, I read everybody's tasks. I am asking if they need any help. Like, I try to be more proactive there because people are sometimes shy. And also, I'm seeing the beat in the changelog channel. The way we design software features, we try to have daily releases on smaller things. Like, even if you work on a project that should be released in 2 months, you are shipping that stuff in our production systems, but it's like feature flagged and normally visible to a certain amount of users. Mm-hmm. So it's a very easy thing to see the project's progress. Like if an engineer haven't opened a pull request ready for shipping for like 1 or 2 days, I'm going and asking, okay, do you need help? What's happening? What's the situation? Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. And do you need any help? And we try to have slow, fast iteration loops. And if, for example, for a whole week there isn't a feature shipped, that's like a red flag. And then there is like try to help and see what's going on. Like sometimes it makes sense. There is like a, this big chunk of feature cannot be implemented in smaller pieces. But sometimes there is like a technical blocker, sometimes a business blocker. But that's basically what my background job is.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like a very organized way to approach expecting work from a certain person, like just working as an individual on one project. One question I have connected with this is, what does happen when somebody goes on vacation or is not available or leaves the company? As like, you know, if you have a certain person working on their own garden for too long of a time, somebody else jumping in might be an issue in some cases. How do you cope with that?
Yeah, just to say, when I say it, it looks very organized, but it's a bit chaotic when you're inside for our situation. So you actually asked me 2 questions, like going to vacation and leaving the company. Mm-hmm. I would answer leaving the company first because it's a bit more shorter answer. So the way we kind of like, this didn't happen intentionally, but it kind of works. In Product Hunt, we think in terms of quarters. So we have a bunch of ideas for projects in the beginning of the quarter. We ship them in the end of the quarter. And what we try to do, and this is a mistake we make a couple of times until we learn, is that some people shouldn't stay more than 2 quarters on a certain area of the system. Mm-hmm. We try to rotate people in different area in the system. That's one thing. So first, it's not good for them. They feel bored. Second, it creates this antipathical knowledge silo where a single person is the point of failure and has this information. So we try not to do this anymore. The other thing is we work the way we structure work. We work on a monolith application. Like this is a bit more technical, but we have this monolith. And the idea is every code getting into the main system has to be reviewed by somebody else on the engineering team first. Like that means that almost any piece of code have been solved by at least one other engineer than the other one. The other thing is we have a very clear, like again, I say style guide, and our code have like a lot of internal practices. So We try to make it easy for any engineer to jump into like any area of the system, and even though they don't know the business domain very well, they should understand the code and recognize the patterns we have on the code level. And the other thing we also do on the code level and the engineering level is we try to build, like when we build features, a lot of them are experiments, and we don't know if this feature is going to last. So what we do is we build tools and more generic tools that can be reused in other features and with other engineers. So, for example, if you work on a project for 6 months, the chances are that for those 6 months you actually produce some tools and features used by other engineers or components for our front end, it's very high. And if when somebody else uses your components or classes or utilities, they actually know a lot what's happening. And we try to have like a software design which is very isolated. So that means when somebody leaves the company, they don't leave they leave a big gap in our hearts and there is like knowledge, but it's something that can be recovered. There is some things we do better job than the others. Like, for example, the way we have our infrastructure, as code. Like, everything we have in our cloud is defined with something called Terraform. That means that the person who wrote it is no longer in Polygon. He is working in AngelList. He's still in the mother company, so we can still ping him with questions. But if you're wondering about something, you can just read the code. Yeah, you might be confused, but it's still there, and you can actually trace steps back. So we try to have this documenting driven approach and code as an infrastructure, so you can actually be put in a place, not feel scared because it's totally foreign by style, and you can follow up like the domain logic. So that's for somebody leaving. For vacation, what we do is like, again, people can take vacations. And what we try to do with vacation is you just have to not have to be, because most times you're working on a project alone, and if you're not working on this project, the project progress is done, like nobody else works on that project most of the time. So what we try to do is when people go to vacations, you either are done with the major parts of your project, or there is you try basically to be done with the major parts of your project and you don't have anything ongoing. Like you try to have all your pull requests closed, and maybe, like again, depends on the project, maybe the project is in beta testing and somebody else is testing it, or maybe, okay, just the project is off for 1 week. Like most people take vacations which are around a week, or if there's like holidays stacked up, a bit more, but again, not having a progress for a project for 1 week gives like opportunity for other people involved in this project to think, or maybe the project is over, right? Depends on the cases.
Sounds very interesting, and especially mentioning that, you know, you have covered both the cases and always somebody in touch on something somebody else does, like, and definitely doing code reviews, like, often helps this issue. And on the other side, yeah, interesting approach on somebody going on vacation and just like installing the project. So then you also, I suppose, plan more in advance that somebody goes on vacation, or like how do you plan then the when the feature goes out and stuff like that?
Well, it's not very organized, to be honest. Like the process for vacation is basically you add it to the calendar and tell us a couple of weeks in advance. Mm-hmm. And like again, the way we ship features are we ship features every day. Like most engineers spend 2 days on a feature.
Okay.
So there isn't features which are closed. Like features are split into smaller features. So when you go to vacation, most probably all your features are closed, and you just haven't started the next advancements and badges on top of those features.
I see. Okay.
So it's kind of clear. And also it's, again, case by case. We don't have such big volume. Like, If you need vacation, just take the vacation. You just, again, try not to be a blocker to anybody else.
Well, that's very clever that, you know, you split features into smaller features. So it's always something you ship out compared to, you know, working on a release or like a bigger feature for, let's say, 3 months and stuff like that. It's also harder to plan.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we have releases, like we do a lot of like Big Bang releases, which is like a back features, but those features are most probably in production for months, feature flagged, only visible for us as an admins.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is, this is not some brilliant design. Like, this is like organically built. Like, this is how we, like, basically the company morphed into this mold, and we are like still changing and polishing it and breaking it in a way. Like, this is how, the way we do work now. A year ago, it was a bit different. Most probably, I hope in 6 months, it will be even better, not worse, and stuff like that.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I think we definitely covered this topic very vastly. And yeah, great answers from your end. To go more onto your side, I am a very big fan of, let's say, hacking productivity. So I'm very happy to hear you are the same. Going a little bit more into that topic, I would ask you, what does your typical day look like? Do you have any routines, checks?
I try to have routines, like I have my perfect day in my head, but most of the time I'm very reactive. Like, the way I have designed my productivity system is to be very reactive. Like, it's resilience. I try to make it resilient. Like, for example, if I don't have to go to the gym, if I cannot go to the gym, I cannot go to the gym. If I cannot work my initial routine in the morning or in the afternoon, like, it's, I'm very adaptable. Like, usually I wake up early, like I wake up like beginning of seven, mm-hmm. try to go to the gym, not succeeding very much the last couple of months because of the conference. Then I go to the office. I have like a co-working space. I work from a co-working space here in Sofia. In the morning, I try to catch up with everything happening when I was, like, sleeping. Like, because, again, we have people working when in all time zones. And I'm trying to catch up everything from Slack, check up all the emails. I keep my email box at emails at inbox zero, like zero emails. I have, like, pipelines to how to handle emails. Then I sit, I do a small like checkup of the news, some reading, checkup of pull requests, and start working on my main goals of the day. So I try to have goals for the day. What do I want to accomplish today on all the levels? Like, if I have one-on-one day, like meeting, have one-on-one meetings, okay, I prepare my notes for those. If I have features, I'm working on those features. I'm checking with all the engineers at least a couple of times a day what are all the open pull requests, since I feel very responsible what's being shipped. So I'm checking pretty much every pull request mm-hmm. we have. And again, I'm trying to have a lot of focused, uninterrupted coding and working on my features hours, because again, my being a lead is more like a side job. Like, again, I have a very big individual contributor role, so I try to ship a lot of code as possible and help the other engineers if they have problems, since I'm one of the more experienced people on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And on the coding side, again, I have set up my whole editor, and I'm trying to be very productive. And also I'm trying to think about how I can improve our system as a whole during the day. And again, just execution. Like, I try to have big chunks of time where I'm just sitting and coding. If I get distracted, what I try to do is there's some days, you know, where you cannot just keep it going, start working. I, for example, do Pomodoros, because I have found that when I'm like absent-minded, Pomodoros are a very good way to focus me. If I get like a mental block of something, I just cannot figure it out. I have two strategies, either do something else and figure this later, or just go for a walk. Like I have a park, like 2 minutes block when I just put my headphones, either think, either do an audiobook, just do some mental exercise to figure out like the problem. It's very, again, I'm very reactive to what's happening during the day. And I try to catch up with news, read and stuff like that. And that's pretty much it. Like, it sounds a bit chaotic, but again, for me, it's like routine without routine.
Definitely. It sounds you definitely have some kind of a plan, and if it works for you, that's important. I think everyone needs to figure out their own routine, and as long as you're productive, a lot of people, like everybody's different. So for somebody, it has to be very structured, and for some people, just being reactive somehow works, and for some people, they're just extremely productive, let's say only a few hours a day, and then they have the biggest output. So it really depends, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like I'm also experimenting with, like every week I'm trying to experiment, or like every 2 weeks to experiment with something new in my workflow and remove something from my workflow. Like again, before I had, like a couple of years ago, I was very productive between 2 and 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Now I'm more productive in the morning. Like again, people are changing, and again, you have to just learn and see, okay, what works for me, what doesn't work for me. Like before, I'm a big user of Todoist, and before, everything I was doing on a project and on a code was in Todoist. Now, in Todoist are only my biggest goals for the day, mm-hmm, and reminders, and I use a note-taking app called Bear, which also has like to-dos when I'm like just on a coding task and just needing to throw random text around. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this started happening the last 2 months. And again, it's just trying to how to improve your system just to feel comfortable and happy. Like the goal, I think it should be when you are like done with your work, take a breath and say, yeah, that was a good day. I solved this cool car problem, did that, feel happy about it, and go on. Like that's like the goal.
For sure. And addressing this, productivity and things, and you working for Product Hunt, you definitely need to share your top 3 favorite products you're using.
Okay, yeah. So that's actually quite easy for me. Like my two favorites right now are Todoist, which I'm like, I think my user ID is like 13 or 15, like I'm one of the first users of Todoist ever.
Oh, cool. Amir will be very happy to hear that.
Oh, yeah. I was one of his commenters on his blog when he had blog during like 2007 or 8. I was one of the, his blog was actually the first RSS feed I actually subscribed to.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I'm a big Todoist fan, and I'm like with all the Max Karma and stuff like that. My second favorite app is called Bear. It's like a note-taking app, and basically in Bear is all my life is in Bear. Like I cannot imagine everything in my life is in a note in a Bear app. In a Bear note, and that's very important for me. And can I say 2 more apps?
Yeah, of course.
Cool. Like one other app is like 1Password. So I'm a bit of very conscious about security, and I use 1Password very like everything important and that shouldn't be seen by anybody. It's in 1Password, like not only passwords. I have like notes, scans, documents, and everything. Like 1Password is also, a lot of people don't know, but it's a note-taking app as well. So a lot of like important things are in 1Password as well. And my 4th app, it's like, this is actually the 3rd most used app on my phone. It's actually Audible. I'm a I'm a big audiobook listener. Like, since I actually don't have much time to just sit and read, I really like to walk and do, like, this is my exercise, basically, walking. So audiobooks are the thing which I like. This is, like, the pretty much one of the most used apps on my phone is Audible.
Oh, that's great to hear. Yeah, I'm also very bullish with Bear, and all my notes for this interview are basically in Bear app. So that's great to hear. As you mentioned, the Audible, can you, I'm also an avid reader, and as I believe a lot of our listeners as well, do you recommend any audiobook? Like, what would be the audiobook you would recommend to listen to?
Oh, that would be hard. Like this year I'm like on 35 audiobooks already.
Oh wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, like for me, like some of my favorite books are, for example, like I think everybody should read Thinking Fast and Slow. Like that's one of the most fundamental books ever. Like this is a really great book. I think everybody should check it. Another good book which I finished this year is called Anti-Fragile, which is a really great book about like how like for me it's a bit like system thinking. On the engineering side, I would suggest there is this great book called The Pragmatic Programmer. The journey, like this is like a really good book. I think the subtitle was From Journeyman to Master. Like I just opened my Goodreads to check that. It's a really great book. And the second book, which is more on the DevOps side, but I think is something which I think every engineer should think about, is called The Phoenix Project. It's a novel, like it tells a story of a guy who is put at engineering role on an engineering organization, and it's like a novel. It tells the story, but I can relate to so much of those stories, and it's a great way of like putting stuff for people to think about. And of course, the last technical book, which again everybody should read, is The Refactoring Patterns. Like I'm an engineer, and this was I think the book which affected me the most, is how to do refactoring, how to apply software design patterns, and how to do testing on that level.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah, I'm very much amazed that you listen to so many books. You said 35. That's an amazing number.
Yeah, and I'm like 3 weeks without the book because of the conference.
Wow, that's great. The one interesting thing I read on Twitter like a couple of weeks ago is, I'm not sure who tweeted, but it was something like, I don't know a single person who is successful and is not reading or listening in this case. So definitely a very underrated thing, I think, just reading and learning from other people.
Yeah, I wouldn't say exactly reading. It's, for me, learning. Like, every successful person, I think, is a learner. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to learn either, like, because, for example, I'm a very bad reader. I cannot read very well. I have, like, a minor dyslexia. So I have a very hard time just sitting on the book reading. And a lot of people are like that. A lot of people are really good by just watching YouTube videos of talks, presentations, and stuff like that. A lot of people are actually really good by just doing and observing people. Like, in my opinion, everybody should just find a way they learn and absorb information and internalize this information.
Yeah, yeah. What I meant is actually the medium on how you absorb information does not matter. It's just more about the way that you learn and especially learn from other people who are successful. Like, is, let's say, a hack to learning and implementing stuff faster.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I have a couple questions before we wrap this up. In your opinion, what is the currently the biggest blocker for seeing more teams working remotely? Or, you know, to paraphrase this question, what do you think the biggest issue is, like, hasn't been solved for remote work yet?
So I see this problem in two ways. It's supply and demand. Like, a lot of companies are very mistrusting of remote mm-hmm. work. And I think it's because it's mostly a trust and a process issue. Their processes are not very aligned to work remotely. We are in an office. And also, like, remote work is really good for iteration, but again, innovation happens when you collaborate with people. That's one of the issues for the company sides. Because if every company was remote, everybody would work remote. The second issue for a lot of people not starting to work remotely is, again, I see two issues. One issue for people is they don't feel confident. They think that I work remotely, that means working from home and not having work-life balance. And that's not totally true. You can rent an office. You can work from a co-working space. You can work from a coffee shop. You can actually gather with other remote workers, not in your company, and rent an office. And I think that's one of the brokers in people's minds, that they don't want to feel lonely by working remotely. And the second blocker is actually something a lot more complicated, and that's accounting and how you actually decide this on a business level. Because if you are remote working in the U.S. and you work for a U.S. company, like, okay, there is a legal entity and you are employed to this legal entity, but most people from my company right now are hired in a very dependent on the country way, because there isn't a clear way, because, like, Polkadot won't open a legal entity in Bulgaria for one or two people. It's too much of a hassle for them. And there is this big problem on the legal side. And this problem is very big for the companies as well as the employees. Because, again, companies want to make good on their employees. They want to give them, like, health care and good benefits and all of that. And employees want to receive those, and they don't want to, like, okay, I have to have a company, I have to have my taxes reports, I have to have, how is this accounted, and if I go to taxes, what are the taxes, what company should I incorporate, should it be in this type of role, how do we handle options, or units, or stocks, or all of that. It's like a legal nightmare. And I'm really grateful for my accountant to help me clear up that things. But that's, I think, a very big issue. And a lot of people can actually get into trouble if they don't see, okay, am I legally employing? Because, okay, just receiving money is cool, but you need to pay your taxes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we could spend hours on this debate, but unfortunately, we need to wrap this up. Rado, thanks again for being our guest. It was really great chatting with you. Where can people reach you?
So people can just find me as rstankov on Twitter and GitHub and pretty much everywhere. That's my slug and username everywhere, rstankov.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Inside Remote. Hope you enjoyed it. Who's coming next week? Next week, we will have somebody from US. He's working on a tool for remote startups. Since this is a new podcast, ratings are very important. If you like this episode and you like Inside Remote, please go to your podcast app or iTunes and rate it. This will help Inside Remote rank better and increase the chance that more people learn about remote work.